All right, welcome back to the South Point Sportsbook Hour number two. My guys in the desert on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Eumanns with Wes Reynolds and Johnny Avello, the DraftKings Sportsbook Director. We have World Series Game 6 tonight in Arlington, Texas, Wes. The first time we've seen a neutral site World Series. It seems like Dodgers fans have kind of taken over the site. The Rays don't really have a national fan base, do they?
No, they don't really have much of a local one either at the dump that is Tropicana Field. And it's really unfortunate.
I've been there many times. Not that bad.
It's really unfortunate.
How many times
though?
You've been to Tropicana Field?
Just once.
Okay.
Just once. But it's unfortunate, though, that the Rays don't get more support because, look, they're the ultimate underdog story. Not a lot of stars on this team. And going toe-to-toe with the Dodgers, see if they've got one more punch left in them tonight.
Johnny, one thing you notice when you watch these teams is the Dodgers have so much more offensive talent, right?
They do. They have some weak spots, too, but, you know, they do. The thing about Tampa Bay is that they're, you know, they're a team that started this back about three years ago to get to this spot. Now, they have some young players. The question is, they're going to be able to keep some of these guys, and you know, the way baseball is today, Matt, with these pitching staffs, I remember guys used to go, he's seven, you're looking for 6'7", now you're looking for 3'4". I mean, it's a different type of game.
You're absolutely right, Johnny. Kevin Cash is really, I think, the first guy that I can recall that started this opener procedure for starting pitchers where, okay, if we get one and two-thirds or two out of him, then we can turn it over to the middle relief and the bullpen. So, look, it's paid off, and they're here in Game 6 trying one more time to get it to Game 7.
Blake Snell was a starter in Game 2. He was a plus 125 in that game. He went 4 2/3 innings, didn't get the win, but he put the Rays on the right path to win the game. He threw 4 no-hit innings to start that game. Tony Gonsolin, a 9.39 ERA and 7 2/3 innings in the postseason. Those guys going head-to-head tonight, Snell and Gonsolin. And Johnny, you've seen a line move here at DraftKings. The Dodgers opened as much bigger favorites than they are right now, right?
Yeah, 55. We were last time we spoke, we were at 34. Now we're 32, and I'm looking at this number. It's dropping everywhere. This, you know, somebody's on this game. I don't know if it's wise guys or I doubt the general public would be on this side, but certainly I think it's a sharp move.
It doesn't seem like the Rays would be a public dog tonight, does it?
No, I think they're getting some sharp action, just kind of fading Gonsolin here, and assuming that the Dodgers are putting all their eggs in one basket for the Game 7, having everybody available. And then in regards to the total, I didn't know where to go here tonight, even though Jerry Meehl's 4-1-1 to the over in the postseason. He is a very inconsistent umpire. So if you follow those umpire trends, this is a guy that's kind of tough to wrap it around with because you never know how wide or how tight his zone is going to be.
I don't know how you bet these games under. How do you bet a game like this under?
I've been pretty much on the overs all series. It did squeak under last time out in Game 5.
Game 5 was 4-2.
Yeah, yep. The home run ball, that's really what the Rays have been living on, especially Randy Arozarena. And the batting average, not good, but they're hitting balls out of the ballpark, and that's kept them in so far.
Dan Shulman does a great job calling the games on ESPN radio.
He's the best.
Yes.
He's the best.
Outstanding. I've listened to some of these games on the radio. I like that broadcast better. Anyway, I thought, you guys, in Game 4 that the Rays had their chance to seize the series. They had runners on first and third, down 3-2, no outs in the fourth, had Kershaw on the ropes, had a chance to get him out. What was this, Sunday night? Game 5 in the fourth inning, 3-2. Runners on first and third, no outs. End up getting no runs across the plate, and Manuel Margot got caught stealing home to end the inning. Wes, I really thought that was a huge sequence in this entire World Series, and it was kind of like the Rays' chance maybe to swing the momentum.
Yeah, when JBT and I were in here on Sunday night during opening lines watching Game 5 when the Rays had the two runners on with one out in the bottom of the seventh, it's like, okay, they got to get at least one here, and then maybe they can steal one in the eighth or the ninth and come away with nothing, and that pretty much just sunk them.
So Game 7, if it gets there, it's going to be Charlie Morton for the Rays against a combination of Clayton Kershaw, actually it'd be Walker Buehler, I think, starting, Clayton Kershaw and Julio Urias, right?
Yeah, all the lefties.
And everybody else who can
pitch. All the lefties going in Game 7 for the Dodgers.
That would be the case, and the Rays would feel good about Charlie Morton because he's got an impeccable record in Game 7.
Charlie, my favorite Morton. I like betting Charlie Morton.
Do you?
puts the MVP in play if we go game seven, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Puts a guy like Kershaw on a hunt, puts Arozarena in a hunt.
Hopefully we get a game seven in the World Series. All right, this is My Guys in the Desert on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Eumanns here at the South Point with Wes Reynolds and DraftKings Sportsbook Director Johnny Avello. We're just talking about World Series Game 6. We will get back to that tonight because there's a lot of action on that baseball game tonight. But NFL Week 8 also in the spotlight, and Sam Monson joins us. He is a pro football-focused NFL podcast host and lead analyst at PFF, and we love to have the pro football-focused guest on VSiN. Sam, I want to start out with the Patriots-Bills game because a lot of bettors like to buy on bad news. There's been a lot of bad news around the Patriots lately. Lost three games in a row for the first time since 2002, off the worst home loss in the Bill Belichick era. Now they go on the road as 3.5 or 4-point underdogs at Buffalo this week. How do you see that matchup between the Patriots and the Bills?
It's definitely an interesting one because there's a lot of reasons to not like the Patriots right now. The quarterback is obviously the most important position, and Cam Newton has really only had one good game this season, that incredible performance against Seattle that's looking more and more like an aberration, not an indication of what he can do. The rest of this team is not in good shape either. I mean, they're starting to fall to pieces on both sides of the ball, but Buffalo's defense does have a real weakness against the run. It's light up front. They haven't been able to stop people all season long. And this feels like the kind of game where the Patriots could go out there and just run the ball relentlessly at them all game long and not even put the ball in Cam Newton's hands as a passer and really sort of threaten them that way. And that's the only thing that really scares me about this game is that, you know, the Patriots are exactly the kind of team that would take advantage of that type of mismatch and really lean on it.
Sam, another interesting game here, 6-0 against 5-1, that being Pittsburgh and Baltimore. And the underdog seen the bulk of the action here early, kind of a public underdog with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Baltimore Ravens now at just -3.5. And I wonder if this is a buy low spot really on Baltimore, because look, one of the things about bettors is that they remember what they saw last, or more importantly, they remember what they saw on national TV. And they saw the Baltimore Ravens take a licking against Kansas City on Monday Night Football a few weeks ago. But does this look like maybe it's a potentially buy low spot for the Ravens to get right? Now the Steelers are getting all the hype, and it's all of a sudden the Baltimore Ravens are saying, hey, we're the team supposed to win this division. What about us?
Certainly, yeah, it's possible. But I think Pittsburgh have put themselves right there in the conversation. And they always kind of were heading into the season, this idea that, look, if Ben Roethlisberger is any kind of upgrade over what they had last season, they're in good shape. They were not a bad team with a combination of Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges at quarterback for them a season ago. So Roethlisberger, even if he isn't back to his best, if he's just a significant upgrade over those two guys, the Steelers are in good shape. And that's the way it's been. But even last week against Tennessee, Roethlisberger didn't play a great game and they still won because this team is so good everywhere else. And in particular, the defense, I think they've really benefited from basically being together for a whole year. There were no new moving pieces. There were no new additions really to this defense. It was the same group from a year ago with potential to be even better with Devin Bush taking a step forward. Unfortunately, obviously, he's been injured since. And a guy like Minka Fitzpatrick being in the building for a whole year. So I think their defense has been incredible. It's been right up there with Baltimore's, and the offense with like guys like Chase Claypool and the receivers they already had. I think it's every bit the match of what Baltimore can do. And of course, the Ravens have taken a step back as well from last year. They're not the force they were, particularly the interior of that offensive line. You know, you lose a guy like Marshall Yanda, a Hall of Fame player, and it's always going to lead to some kind of regression. So I actually think this game is a lot closer than some people are giving it credit for. And even though the Ravens may be suffering from what happened to them against Kansas City, I mean, I think the Steelers can cause them all kinds of problems as well. So I'm fascinated to see how this game's going to go. And these two games, obviously, between these teams are going to be huge for the division and seeding in the AFC.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at this matchup, too, because the Ravens off a bye, Steelers off a tough game at Tennessee. Johnny, how do you think it's going to be bet? In the past, when you looked at Steelers-Ravens games, you would just take the 3 or 3.5 with the dog a lot of times. It's almost like an autoplay because these games went down to the wire. Right now at DraftKings, you got Ravens -3.5, total of 46.5. Is this a strong two-way action game, or are you going to see more on Baltimore?
No, it's just be a strong two-way action game. These two teams in play, the number's usually 3.
Yeah.
You know, and you go back and look at their history over the last 10 years, 3-3-3-3-3. It's always there. We open this one a little bit higher. You know, Ravens at home, and Ravens probably have the little better defense here, but they took that. They gobbled all of that up.
Sam, how does the Pittsburgh defense rank in the NFL for you? We've been talking a lot about the Tampa Bay defense. It's kind of what separates, you know, a team like Seattle from Tampa Bay is that the Buccaneers are so good. You know, they're number one in the NFL in run defense, top 10 in scoring defense. How's the Steelers defense stack up to you?
The Steelers defense has been on fire this season. Yeah. They've been the number one or the number two ranked blitz team in the NFL, right there behind the Ravens, who led the league a season ago. They've been the number one team in the NFL in terms of generating pressure. Up until last week, they were generating pressure at a rate we've never seen from a defense before. I think they've just dropped down into the sort of human levels of what we've seen from a team before after that Tennessee game. But they are coming after opposing offenses. They are throwing bodies at the line of scrimmage. And whether it's a pass or whether it's a run and they just run blitz, they are causing problems for teams. I think they can be beaten over the top, and they can be vulnerable if you can pick up the blitz and all the rushers and have enough time to get the ball over the top. But that's not easy, and a lot of teams have struggled to do that. So I think they're going to cause some issues for this Ravens offense, particularly given that weakened interior. You know, the guys like Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt can come up the middle against those interior Ravens blockers one-on-one and get some pressure. And then it's a case of whether the Ravens can neutralize it with their one-man advantage in terms of Lamar Jackson, and also whether they can punish them over the top with a deep pass.
Follow Sam Monson at PFF underscore Sam, Pro Football Focus. I want to talk briefly about the Raiders-Browns game, too. This number's ticked up from a lot of spots today, from Cleveland -2.5 to -3. No Odell Beckham now in that Browns offense. And the Raiders have had a chaotic situation to deal with, Sam, with their offensive line coming off the bye week. And not sure if John Gruden was upset that they had to play the game against the Buccaneers early Sunday afternoon. Now the Raiders go on the road trying to rebound here. How do you see the Raiders-Browns matchup?
Yeah, and I think they've got a good shot at it. I think people look at the way Baker Mayfield played this week and are getting a little bit carried away. And I don't want to take anything away from him. I think once he got himself together, he did play extremely well. But there was the same story in week 2 against Cincinnati. This defense just made it too easy for him. And, you know, he was forced off his first read in that game twice by that Bengals defense. Like, he didn't have to go through a progression. He didn't have to find the open receiver. He was able to just dial in on his first read and throw the ball where he wanted to, and he did a good job of that. But the Raiders are going to force him to go beyond that. And, you know, the Raiders don't have a great defense, but they're going to be able to force Baker Mayfield to come off that first read and find a second guy, and that's where he's been a lot worse this season. I think Baker Mayfield's play is still very much an open question for this Browns team. And if the Raiders can cause them some problems, the Browns are a lot worse, I think, than people are giving them credit for.
Okay, next game I want to throw at you is Saints and Bears. And last night the public was on the Bears as an underdog, and they got beat down 24-10 by the Rams. It was a really dull game offensively for the Bears, which is nothing new. Nick Foles not playing well. But the Saints defense has some issues here, too. Sam, how about the Saints -4 at Soldier Field?
It does. And, man, I was one of the people that thought the Bears were good value for that underdog spot. I thought, I couldn't believe the line was as big as it was, and it turns out it wasn't big enough. So, You know, you're right. The Saints, one of the biggest stories from them this season is that their defense has just not played to the talent level that they have in that building. They've really, nobody on that defense has been playing to the level they should be playing at. You've got Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber players like Marshawn Lattimore that are not grading well at all at PFF. But ultimately, I think it's going to come down to the offenses. And as much as Drew Brees, his arm strength is a problem, it is a limiting factor, I think, on how good this offense can be. They're still racking up points. They're still moving the ball fairly easily. Even against a better defense like Chicago's, they're going to put up some points. And then the Bears will therefore need Nick Foles to be able to answer. And right now he isn't. Now, Nick Foles being Nick Foles, there's always the specter of that player that, you know, a Super Bowl MVP that can come back at any time. But so far, we really haven't seen him this year. So I think the Saints are value for it.
Sam, the best division in the NFL, at least through 7 weeks thus far this season, has been the NFC West. And we've got a matchup in the NFC West this week. San Francisco at Seattle. 49ers take the early money. They opened +4, now down to +3. Some juice slated to the Seattle side. But Seattle off their first loss of the season. Sometimes a difficult spot for a team to get over when their O had to go in the loss column. So now the 5-1 Seahawks hosting San Francisco. Are you buying into San Francisco? Are they back from that kind of early season Super Bowl hangover?
It's tough to tell because heading into that game against the Patriots, you know, the majority of their damage was all done against really bad teams. You know, the Giants, the Jets were their two wins. They got a win against the Rams, but all the Rams' wins had come against the NFC East as well. So we really didn't know anything about this 49ers team. Then they go across and absolutely murder the Patriots and look very much like they're back and they're for real. I think what we do know is that Kyle Shanahan is a genuine master in terms of getting guys open, in terms of having production, regardless of the talent that's around him. You know, he is scheming offensive game plans that aren't even asking a quarterback to do an awful lot. They're just getting the ball in the hands of their playmakers and running the ball, and it's all working extremely well. And the Seattle Seahawks don't have a great defense. So I think Shanahan is going to have success with this offense. And Jimmy Garoppolo is only getting more healthy coming back from that ankle injury. So their offense should be in good shape, but slowing down Russell Wilson, that Seahawks offense, is the problem. And Russell Wilson has been pretty much on fire this season. I know he had some mistakes against Arizona and the bad interceptions, but he's generally been playing out of his mind so far this year. And it's going to be a tough ask for that 49ers defense to stop him.
Sam, all right, Sunday Night Football. It's been a debacle in Dallas. And Ben DiNucci, seventh-round draft pick, is going to start for a seventh-rounder out of James Madison. Is going to start for the Cowboys at quarterback. What do you make of the Cowboys-Eagles game? And we don't see a number on this yet, I don't think, Johnny. What are we going to see? Eagles 7.5? Do you have that up at DraftKings?
We do. Yeah, we opened up 6.5. We're up to 7.5.
All right, Sam, how about the Eagles as 7.5-point favorites over Ben DiNucci and the Dallas Cowboys?
I mean, a 2-win Philadelphia team being 7.5-point favorites over anybody is absolutely wild, but it's tough to argue with it too much because Dallas are going to be starting, like as you said, a 7th-round rookie behind one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL going up against the Philadelphia defensive front that is still very much for real. Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, you know, they can come after you and generate pressure, and they're going to have an easy task of it because that's a bad offensive line that is no longer going to be protected by its quarterback. If anything, just judging by the way young quarterbacks play, it's going to look worse because of Ben DiNucci being back there through no real fault of Ben DiNucci's, just because that's the way young quarterbacks are. It takes them a little bit longer to process, to go through their reads. They hold the ball longer than guys like Andy Dalton or Dak Prescott. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to see how Dallas's offense is going to get anything going beyond just throwing up a few prayers to their top-end receivers and hoping those guys make some plays for them.
Yeah, the total 43.5 at DraftKings on that Cowboys-Eagles game Sunday night. I really can't wait to see it. It's kind of like when you have to look at a 10-car pileup on the highway when you drive by. This Dallas Cowboys team is a disaster. Right now, Sam, you tweeted this about Jarrett Stidham. He's attempted 27 career passes. 13 have been caught by his teammates. 4 have been caught by the defense. He has a worse career passer rating than a throwaway. New England almost rolled into the season with him as the starter. Do you think if the Patriots lose this week and drop to 2-5, that Bill Belichick is going to be a seller at the trade deadline and might just go away from Cam and give Jarrett Stidham a shot to see what he's got?
It sounds like they might already be sellers at the trade deadline. There's talk that Stephon Gilmore might be getting moved, and they had to, you know, move his contract around in the offseason just to make him happy heading into this year. So I could definitely see them being sellers. Whether or not they turn to Stidham, I don't know that that's going to happen. Belichick was kind of asked about it this week and basically said, look, Cam gives us the best chance to win. And I know that's sort of coaching platitudes, but I honestly think he means it. You know, Cam Newton is a better bet to win games than Jarrett Stidham. Mm-hmm. And every time Stidham comes on the field, it just looks bad. I think he's probably seen enough of Jarrett Stidham to think that, you know, he's not giving you anything for the remainder of the season. And there really isn't much of a purpose in playing him. It's not even like you find out what you have in this guy and it's potentially more useful down the line. I think if the Patriots do end up blowing this whole thing up and, you know, shipping off assets and trades, none of the quarterbacks they have on the roster right now are there for even the medium to long term. They're all out of there.
Bill Belichick certainly got to find the answer at the quarterback position. That's for certain. Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. Always a lot of great information on Pro Football Focus. Johnny Avello and Wes Reynolds return. We come back. We'll talk about top plays for tonight and this weekend.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, and new customers receive a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. Use promo code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, when you sign up and start betting with the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's that easy. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use VSIN code, and get up to $1,000 as a sign-up bonus. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Must be 21, New Jersey, Pennsylvania only. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit the DraftKings Sportsbook for full details. Back to you, Matt Eumanns.
All right, thanks. Wes Reynolds, John Avello join me here at the South Point studio today. And don't forget about the big circus show tonight on the red carpet with Tim Murray, Dave Farah, and Danielle Alvari. You can watch it all here on vsin.com. Also pick up the 2020 College Football Betting Guide. Wes, you and I worked on this with Jonathan Von Tobel, Bruce Marshall, a lot of guys involved in updating the four conferences that are back in action, and you can get all the updated information in the updated, college football betting guide of BSN.
Yeah, you
Pac-12 and the MAC about to join the party.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get some weeknight action, which is always a welcome sight, and then some other event taking place next Tuesday night to compete against it.
Don't know what that would be. Doesn't really interest me, though. Johnny, what is it? What's he talking about? An eating competition or what? What do you have up at DraftKings that might be unusual?
Well, on Halloween night, and this is it. You guys might find some interest in this.
Okay.
It's at the Paris Hotel in the Beer Park.
It's a beer drinking contest.
And so the top six eaters in the world are going to eat 6 pounds of candy. They're going to eat a pound of candy corn, then Kit Kats, then M&M's, Milky Ways, Snickers, and then Reese's. And we have this up for wagering one state right now in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in a rush to get down on this, you have to go to Colorado. Joey Chestnut, favorite at 10 to 11. Jeffrey Esper, 8 to 5. Dan and Breeden, 6 to 1. Nick Worry, 7 to 1. Matt Stoney, you know him from the hot dog eating contest. He's 14. And Mickey Sudo, the top eating woman hot dog eater. She's 15 to 1.
I've actually seen Joey Chestnut do an eating contest in person at the Big Ten Championship in Indianapolis. St. Elmo's Steakhouse. I'm sure you've been there in downtown Indy, Matt. Had the shrimp cocktail eating contest. Well, you not only had to have the shrimp, you had to have that hot cocktail sauce as well.
I never went to that steakhouse, Wes. I know it's top.
All the media giants go to that steakhouse. I'm surprised Matt Eumanns has not been there.
I've been gone from the Midwest for 20 years, Wes. I don't hang out at steakhouses in Indianapolis. Not even back in the day. Well, back in the, when I lived there, didn't have any money. That's an expensive place, right?
Matt's like, is Indiana still a state?
Arby's. No, he went to Arby's. That was a state.
That's there. Right. Yes. That's right. Okay, so I would think just off the top of my head there, Joey Chestnut's got to be more of a odds-on favorite than, what'd you have him?
10 to 11.
10 to 11?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Chestnut wastes everybody in these competitions. I don't know about candy.
Yeah, eating. Don't mix your hot dogs with your candy.
I guess it's got to be a lot tougher to eat candy corn and stuff like that. I thought you were going to say it was a beer drinking competition.
No, you might have a shot to be in that one.
I would like to enter. West top plays, let's get to them. I've got a couple for college football. I'm waiting on some better numbers on some other plays I talked about this morning with Mitch and Paul. And I want to play Nebraska. Two against Wisconsin. Johnny, do you see you have a number up at DraftKings on the Nebraska?
Nope, not now.
Okay. So I'll go with 142. This is Friday night. Wyoming +2 over Hawaii. And then on Saturday, UNLV +14 over Nevada. By the way, that's one of the biggest movers at Circus Sports since it opened. It was Nevada -8, moved 6 points. Rebels catching 14 in their home opener. I know they looked really bad Saturday night at San Diego State. They were trying to play three quarterbacks. Marcus Arroyo, it was a clown show, really, in the first game. And a lot of times, a team will make its most improvement from game one to game two. I think it could be the case with UNLV. And, Wes, I was not blown away by Nevada. Saturday night against Wyoming, caught a little break with the Cowboys starting quarterback going down. Levi Williams came in, almost rallied Wyoming to a win. And Jay Norvell is still one of the worst game managers in college football. So I'm going to go. I'll talk about this more as the week goes on, but it's Friday night, Wyoming +2 over Hawaii, Saturday, UNLV +14 over Nevada, and Sunday, I'm going with the Patriots +4 over the Bills. I'm going to buy on the bad news with the Patriots, Wes, and I still have this Rays series bet pending. Best bets for you.
Yeah, I agree with your Patriots play. My best bets are going to be, and you can wait on this number because it may go up now that Penn State's down to their 13 tailback. Penn State +12.5 is what I'm going to take. I think a little bit of an overreaction. They weren't as bad as it looked last week. Texas +4, liked what I saw out of them, and I think everybody faded Oklahoma State last week. I think this is the way to go against Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. Notre Dame's got Clemson on deck. Maybe a lot more running game here, under 57.5. Mississippi State +31.5, and I got the Vikings +7 over the Packers.
All right, those are Wes's top plays for this week. Quick break. We come back. We'll talk more college football betting.
It's a big week here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we have some great news for everyone. Starting right now, you can watch every VSiN show for free on VSiN.com all week long. Watch Follow the Money, A Numbers Game, The Lombardi Line, even Long Shots with Wes Reynolds. And all of our full 14 hours of live daily sports betting program, it's all free 24/7 on VSiN.com this week. And while you're there, check out our 10-day free subscription trial to sample everything we have to offer, including the daily best bets email and our point spread weekly betting guide. This is a perfect week to get more from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Head to VSiN.com right now to start watching for free. Matt Eumanns.
All right, we have a little bit of news in college football from Brett McMurphy of Stadium, one of our favorite guests. Friday's Marshall at Florida International game postponed because of COVID issues at FIU. According to Stadium, the game will try to be rescheduled, but unlikely since both teams don't have the same open dates, Wes. So that's one game off. Every week it seems like we have a handful of games, but that's it so far.
Well, and we did have one change. Now, it's been adjusted. It's a new rotation number, 199-200 on your rotation. New Mexico and San Jose State, no longer in Albuquerque, going to be played in San Jose because I believe San Jose State opened like a 9.5-point favorite down in Albuquerque. Now the adjustment as the Spartans play host off their win over Air Force, first game of the year for New Mexico, 13.5 now pretty much market-wide on the Spartans.
Well, let's hope that Wisconsin and Nebraska does not get postponed or canceled. The Big Ten trying to sneak in an 8-game schedule in 8 weeks. And a lot of COVID issues out with Wisconsin. Dennis Dodd reported this from CBS Sports. Quarterback Graham Mertz has tested positive for COVID a second time. And that backs up the first positive test. he will enter the Big Ten's 21-day protocol. And Wes, the Big Ten is a lot different than the SEC when it comes to these COVID issues. Jeff Brohm, the Purdue coach, missed last week's game. He had to sit out 10 days. Graham Mertz here is going to miss 21 days in the Big Ten's protocol. The SEC is getting players, other conferences getting players on the back on the field a lot faster.
Yeah, SEC just sends you out there and said, put some dirt on it and let's go play, guys. What are we doing here? Big Ten obviously taking extreme precautions.
So Graham Mertz not going to play against the Cornhuskers this week. And Wisconsin lost its starting quarterback, Jack Cohn, to foot surgery in mid-October. So Cohn goes down. Mertz is out. How about Chase Wolf, the number three quarterback? He also tests positive, waiting for another result. But it looks like it's going to be Danny Vanderboom at quarterback. He's got one career pass, a three-yard touchdown, and that's going to cause a major adjustment in this number. Circus Sports opened this Sunday. I saw 10 on the app when I logged on. Johnny, do you have a number on Wisconsin-Nebraska right now at DraftKings? You had one up not too long ago, correct?
We were 3.5 when we closed it, and that's probably we're going to open back up three or three and a half.
Wes, do you take the 3.5 with the Cornhuskers? I thought really they played a lot better, and a lot of people were giving them credit for. That game was tied at 14 late in the second quarter. Some bad calls went against them. I just thought they had some bad luck, and that game was not a 52-17 game.
No, it wasn't. And look, they were on my list, and I think on yours on Sunday night to take if it was 10 or even, you know, 8, 9, somewhere in that range. But now at 3, 3.5, probably going to be a pass or maybe wait for an in-game opportunity because this could be kind of a rally around the family spot, if you will, for the Badgers.
Yeah, I wish I had taken the 10, right, when it was there. Obviously, I'm kicking myself for not doing that. All right, we got a question for Wes Reynolds here, and I have a feeling I know how he's going to answer it. I might disagree with him, but let's get to it. Which team do you think had the most impressive Week 8 win? This was posed on Twitter at CFB on Fox. And the options, ready? Indiana over Penn State, Cincinnati at SMU, or Michigan at Minnesota. Which team had the most impressive win in college football last week? Johnny, I'm going to let you answer this one first. Is it Indiana, Cincinnati, Michigan, or other? Did you have another one in mind?
No, I like the Indiana one. I mean, that was was it an impressive win? It did it in spectacular fashion. Yeah,
it was dramatic.
And we returned the money on that game. I think you read about that, right? We returned the bettors' money in that game. So it was kind of good. What was a win-win for the players all around?
Why did you decide to do that, by the way? And did it have anything to do with the controversial finish, whether or not Indiana quarterback Michael Penix actually got the ball to the goal line?
Exactly.
That's why
that
you
was the reason.
How much money do you have to return in a situation like that?
It was quite substantial, more than we have right now between the three of us.
All right, Wes, which team had the most impressive Week 8 win? I'll tell you that on Fox, there were almost 4,300 votes. Indiana got 59%, Michigan 22%, Cincinnati 12%. And other had 5.6%.
From a heartstring standpoint, it's obviously my alma mater, Indiana, being that this is their first win over a top 10 team since 1987. First win in Bloomington in God's country, Bloomington, Indiana, 1967. Last time Indiana beat a top 10 team at home, that was, of course, when they went to the Rose Bowl. So for sure an omen for Indiana to go to the Rose Bowl when there's a global pandemic and I can't go watch, as I've been waiting my whole life. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. It's not Indiana in terms of the impressiveness, 211 yards. They took advantage of Penn State's mistakes. I think the most impressive win was Michigan because they had to replace four NFL guys on the offensive line, and they just absolutely ran over Minnesota on Saturday night.
All right, so we are on the same page there. I think Michigan definitely had the most impressive win. When you look at what the Wolverines did on the road as 3-point favorites and just bulldozed Minnesota in that game, 49-24. The Gophers really, I felt like early in the second quarter that they were just hanging on for dear life, that they were on the verge of getting blown out. And they did get their doors blown off in the second half. Joe Milton, the quarterback, first start on the road. Wolverines dropped 50 on the Gophers, who won 11 games last season.
Michigan looks like they finally have that right mix at quarterback because they've either always had a runner like Denard Shoelace Robinson, mm-hmm. who wasn't a great passer, or they had a good passer who really couldn't move at all. So now they have a guy, both Joe Milton, a big kid, 6'5", 250, and a great job by that offensive line, having lost four starters to the National Football
League. As Wes pointed out, Johnny, why I won't pick Indiana is the Hoosiers only had 211 total yards in that game. Penn State controlled the ball for more than 40 minutes, doubled up Indiana in time of possession. Sean Clifford had 357 total yards and four touchdowns, and the Hoosiers only won the game because James Franklin mismanaged the end of it. Indiana had no business, Wes, even getting the ball back and having a shot to win that game.
But I'm like Conor McGregor. I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody for that Indiana
win. I know
win.
You're not going to apologize, but I'm saying that does that to me. That's
but facts
why,
are fact.
That's why it's not the most impressive win of the weekend. Penn State gave it away. James Franklin's buffoonery. You could actually make a case of Rutgers had the best win of the weekend, right, as a 13-point dog on the road in the Big Ten, Johnny?
Yeah, and is that – I was going to ask you, is that one of your reasons for liking Rutgers this week because of Indiana's win with not a lot of offense, a gift?
Yeah,
and Rutgers actually played a very good football game.
It is. Yeah, it's a letdown spot for the Hoosiers on the road, and they only had 211 yards total offense against Penn State. Quick break. We'll wrap up the show here when we come back.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. You instantly get a list of quality candidates from Indeed's resume database the moment you sponsor a job. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. And now, Matt Eumanns with My Guys in the Desert.
Thank you, Jacob Roach. Filling in today for Danielle Alvari, who's on the red carpet tonight with Tim Murray for the Circa opening night show here on VSiN. Go to VSiN.com and the VSiN app to watch that tonight. And, John, I know you're a Johnny Avello, DraftKings Sportsbook Director. You're a big fan of shows like the Oscars and the Academy Awards. I hate those shows, those Hollywood Awards shows, but you like them.
I love them.
Are you going to watch tonight's circus show? You don't have to lie.
No, probably not.
There's going to be celebrities out there. It's going to be, Wes, it's going to be like a real red carpet.
What do I watch it on, by the way?
VSiN.com and the VSiN app.
Oh, VSiN.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
Matt would only watch the Oscars if it were all Westerns nominated for Best Picture. If it was like Shane or Cool Hand Luke, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, yeah, okay. Then Matt would be all about it.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Wes, I know you love shows like that, too, because you're a soap opera type of guy. You love the award shows, don't you? The Hollywood award shows.
I don't mind it from time to time. I'd like them to follow Johnny's lead and book some action out here. Let's get some variety. You want to get more females involved in sports betting? They love those shows.
Danielle Alvari on the show tonight. Tim Murray playing the role of Ryan Seacrest. You can watch that tonight.
So is Danielle Kelly Ripa then?
Who's that?
Matt Eumanns is on the cutting edge of popular culture here, ladies and gentlemen.
Who is that?
She's the host on the morning show.
Kelly and
I don't watch morning.
Kelly
shows.
And Ryan.
I don't watch morning shows. Is she the one with the daughter? Oh, forget it. Let's move on.
He comes in and is mad at 2 in the afternoon when Drew Barrymore is on the TVs here in the studio.
All right, let's talk about Ohio State, Penn State. That going to be the highest handle college football game this weekend, Johnny?
Looks like it. Yep. Sure does look like it.
What type of number movement have you seen in that game, and where do you think it closes right now? It's basically Ohio State minus 12.
We went to 11.5.
Did you?
Yep.
You've talked about how the public likes to bet the Buckeyes. Do you think this number goes back up by kickoff on Saturday night?
I think it does. The general public brings it back up, but there's no reason to bring it back up because Penn State, their loss last week took this game from – 9, 8.5, 9 up to 13. So it was a big adjustment. And so, you know, either Penn State rebounds and shows us the real Penn State or they're just a fraud.
So one thing, Wes, you and I this is one of my point spread weekly best bets this week is Penn State. And I talked about this morning. I took 13 with Penn State. Right now it's 12.5. I didn't want to put it on the top plays list because I think there'll be a chance to get 13 again.
Mm-hmm.
It might matter. You never know.
I wanted 14, but I'm not sure if that's going to show.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for 14, too, and it looked like that was not going to happen. So I took 13 plus 13 with Penn State in this game. So the Nittany Lions held Stevie Scott, Indiana running back, to 57 yards on 20 carries. Sean Clifford had four total touchdowns, 357 total yards against Indiana. Penn State defense held the Hoosiers 211 total yards and doubled up their time of possession. I thought there were a lot of positives with Penn State. James Franklin's poor game management aside, off a loss like that with the Nittany Lions coming home, I kind of feel like they're in a decent spot here grabbing the points. And that was one of your top plays,
right? Yeah, it is. And one thing, too, injury information for Penn State. We, of course, know that Journey Brown, who was their starting running back going into the season, out with a heart ailment. And also Noah Cain now is going to be out for the season. So Penn State down to that third-string running back. He was actually the kid that made the boo-boo of scoring the touchdown when Indiana was – that's exactly what Indiana wanted to happen. Devin Ford, but he's a really talented kid. Penn State probably has the best running back core in the Big Ten when you really look at it. So they are down to their third team, but that third team guy for Penn State is very talented. And also for Penn State, Sean Clifford can run the ball. That was oftentimes their best offense even last week. And Indiana really struggled with stopping Sean Clifford on his scrambles. And if you were looking for a chink in the armor in a 35-point win that Ohio State had last week, Nebraska's quarterbacks, Adrian Martinez, 13 carries for 85 yards. Luke McCaffrey, 9 carries for 80 yards. So quarterbacks can scramble and get some yards on this team. So that's kind of why I liked Penn State. And plus, James Franklin, for as down as you and I are on him, Matt.
It's not the first time he's fouled up a game at the end.
Right. 4-1 against the spread the last five against the Buckeyes. So he does get them up for that team. And I know, look, it's not the wideout of 100,000 people at Beaver Stadium in Happy Valley, but I have to think they're going to be up for this. And I think you're getting a premium here just based off that 1 week of results. I would like to get more, but I think 12.5, 13, or anything higher is good.
Yeah, I like Penn State in this game as well. But I think the public's going to come more on Ohio State by the weekend, Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the 11.5 won't last. That'll be up to probably 12.5. And like you said, probably closer to 13. Hey, Justin Fields, he was fabulous last week. Yeah.
Not knocking Justin Fields. I just think Ohio State might be a little bit overvalued going on the road. And don't forget, that was a 14-14 game against Nebraska late in the second
quarter. Right.
Yeah, but that's typical Ohio State, isn't it? They do that during the course of a season. Let you stick around a little bit, bury you late.
I'm not sure they can bury Penn State, but
maybe not.
We'll see. Saturday night. That's going to be a good one, Wes. I think your Indiana bet on the Rose Bowl is in jeopardy because it's the winner of Penn State, Ohio State. Yeah. It's going to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
It's going to be Ohio State.
So hopefully Indiana at least plays a bowl. Only 8 games this year, and these bowls are dropping like flies with the Holiday Bowl getting canceled last week.
Yeah, that was disappointing, too. I hated to see the Hawaii Bowl go by the wayside. It's one of my favorites. The Holiday Bowl's going by the wayside. Anyway, let's get to NFL Week 8 and the high-impact games for the bookmaker, Johnny Avello at DraftKings this week. One of them is going to be Vikings-Packers, right? And this is one of Wes's top plays. There are a couple spots out there where you could still grab Vikings plus 7. I think you did that, right, Wes?
Yes.
John, what's this game going to be bet like at DraftKings, Minnesota-Green Bay? Looks like you were at 6.5, total of 54.
The spread's probably not going to move too much off of the 6.5, but I could tell you that the money line's going to be pounded on our network because it has been every week.
Teasers.
Yeah, and teasers, yes. So that's one of those plays that I can expect to have a ton of money on, money line and teasers.
What about Jets-Chiefs? And that number is 19 or 19.5, total of 48.5. And we thought there was a chance this line might even come higher, between 20 to 24. And that's before the Jets looked more competitive than an 18 to 10 loss to the Bills last week.
Yeah, we opened 20.5. We're down to 19. This will probably tick up a little bit, probably closer to 20. This will probably be one of the least bet games, I would believe, for the morning because the spread's just too high. And, you know, then the money line is going to be astronomical, but nobody's going to want any piece of that. So I would see this was one of the lower bet games next week.
This is like the Clemson-Syracuse game of last weekend's college football card with this NFL card. I'm probably not going to bet it, but I would be Jets or nothing. This is like a get-through-it game for the Chiefs.
Yeah,
don't get hurt.
I'm going to be nothing.
Yeah. Nothing's probably the best play.
That 19.5 is not going to look like a big number when the Chiefs are up 14-0 right off the bat.
I think we'll put up a Le'Veon Bell prop on that one, right?
Yeah.
Will he score? Yeah, that's a good prop for that.
Former team, absolutely.
Yeah. DraftKings, you put up a lot of creative props, that's for sure. I look at the site, you got a lot of props.
It's like Super Bowl Sunday. Every game has, you know, probably half the slate of Super Bowl props are. So we do have a lot.
All right, so a game like that with a big spread, I typically don't get involved in those games either unless I see something to like in the dog. I don't see much to like in the Jets. What about Steelers-Ravens? This has got to be a high-handle, strong two-way action type of game. Ravens, 3.5-point home favorites.
Huge. Yeah, this going to be a huge betting game. And it's, you know, week off helps the Ravens for sure, and they can't fall behind two games in a division, so I think both teams will be all out. And, hey, to Pittsburgh, been great against the spread so far. Why are the players going to get off them now?
Yeah. Monday night, just mentioned too, Chris Godwin is out. Finger surgery, it looks like, and he is not going to be on the field for the Buccaneers. They are 10.5-point favorites in New York against the Giants. That's Monday night football. Let's get to game 6 of the World Series. Dodgers trying to close it out against the Rays tonight. This starts at 8:08 p.m. Eastern, and it's Blake Snell against Tony Gonsolin. And Blake Snell drawing a lot of action. Johnny, I've seen this DraftKings line crash throughout the day and throughout this show while you've been on with us. Where did you start and where are you now?
Down to a quarter. And we were talking, we were 34, 32. Down, we're down to a quarter after opening up 55. And I see the other locations out there down to 18. So this is certainly a sharp play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not our network, just casual better. So, but with that being said, there'll be money on the Dodgers too, so it'll probably be a good balancing act for us tonight.
What do you think, Wes? This price getting pretty cheap on the Dodgers. South Point right now -123, DraftKings -125. I like the Rays in the game. I think you do too.
Yeah, I think this is breaking down, at least like what Johnny said, kind of a professionals against casuals, pros versus Joes, if you will, here. But I think a lot of it is because of Gonsolin going and just the fact that this is the rematch of game two. And what did they see in game two? Blake Snell had 4 2/3 of a shutout, no hit baseball until a couple walks in that inning.
Yeah, Snell no hit the Dodgers through four, went 4 2/3 in game two and got the win. And that one, I like Snell again tonight. I've got the Rays in the series. I hope this goes 7. I'd love to see the Rays win tonight. If you want to bet the exact outcome on the Dodgers to win the series in 7 at DraftKings and South Point, it's +250. 5-2 odds on that. Odds to win the World Series MVP. Corey Seager, the favorite of DraftKings right now, +180. He's reached base 14 times. That's a high in the series. Clayton Kershaw has won both of his starts with a 2.31 ERA. He is at 2-1 odds. Johnny, you think it's going to be Seager or Kershaw to win World Series MVP?
Well, it could be. One flyer you might look at is Muncy. Muncy's got 7 hits, 6 RBIs, a couple of good, one half a decent game, and one great game could put him in that elite status.
Wes Reynolds, call it. Who's the World Series MVP? Who are you betting?
I am going to say it is going to be Justin Turner at 8-1. I'm going to go off the radar here.
Nice. Good.
All right, that's Wes Reynolds, Johnny Avello from DraftKings. And stay tuned here on VSiN tonight. It's the Circa Grand Opening Party with Tim Murray and Danielle Alvari up in a couple hours.